persecution, of hunger, and just want to say that there are a lot of resources in the community. Sometimes we don't know where those resources are, and therefore we are. I'm here. LULAC, it's national. Join us. We continue to advocate. We have the platform to continue advocating for education, for health, for human rights. And that was the foundation of LULAC, and we continue to that throughout the United States. Reach out, lulac.org, get involved, get engaged, vote. We're in a critical situation now that we need to be engaged, involved, and participate in. You know, congratulate and commemorate those women that are valientes or are warriors in our communities.
So. Exactly. Yes.
Que vivan. Que viva la mujer,
que vivan las mujeres. Bravo.
Viva.
Que vivan. And this has been Ivan Rivero with Diaspora on this special edition of Women's International Women's Day. Gracias and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Shishini.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, and today is International Women's Day. If you haven't heard the news, we're doing 40 hours of all women-centered programming, started last night at around 8 p.m., and we'll go through Saturday, ending with music from the True Vine at noon. Up next is a special piece from Janka. The program is Out of the Streets of Portland. And let's see, it is titled The Story of Kenton Women's Village. So stay tuned for more programming. Also throughout the month, it is Women's History Month. So stay tuned next Wednesday, March 13th. We have some special programming during Jazz Lives. That's right after the Spanish headlines at 12:08 to 2 p.m. And we'll have a special guest host with Marcia Hawker. It'll be Paula Walker. So stay tuned all month and especially throughout the day. Don't forget, we are in the middle of our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. Please help us reach our $22,000 fundraising goal by March 16th. Thank you so much. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and helping navigate the systems and services that the Joint Office of Homeless Services and its partners either have in place or are developing to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. On this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, in honor of International Women's Day and Women's History Month, we're featuring the story and work of Kenton Women's Village. The village was opened in the Kenton neighborhood in June of 2017, the second village-style shelter to open in Portland. Dignity Village, the first in the country and the model for many other village-style shelters, opened in the year 2000 and is still in operation. The Kenton Women's Village is a 20-pod village which came about as the result of a concerted advocacy effort that included designers, houseless advocates, and service providers. The village was the outcome of an effort in 2016 and 2017 called the Partners on Dwelling Village Coalition. Members of Portland State University's Center for Public Interest Design were asked for pod designs for use at Hazelnut Grove and other newly forming villages. Rather than concentrate on the design of pods, the center suggested a process that would result not only in a series of new pod prototypes, but also open up dialogue with the public about local government's role in supporting village efforts. Local architect Mark Lakeman, who's also the founder of Portland's annual Village Building Convergence, provided guidance on the design of the pods by Portland State University students. 14 design teams created the different styles of sleeping pods in 2 months for $2,000 each. In 2019, the village was relocated to its current location on Columbia Boulevard. Kenton Women's Village is open to currently houseless, self-identified women, including trans women, and offers opportunities for community leadership, self-governance, and self-determination. We'll speak with Valerie Yvette Peterson, a case manager at the village. But first, we'll hear from a participant in the Kenton Women's Village on what led to her losing her housing and how Kenton Women's Village is helping her get back on her feet.
My story's kind of a little bit strange because I was like doing really, really well in Portland. I had like two cars, a nice house, like everything was perfect. And then my family back home called me to see if I could come and help because my mother had early signs of dementia and my sister was about ready to have a baby and my great aunt was about ready to have surgery. So I asked my kids who were like, you know, in the late teens if how they'd feel if I left. And my oldest son, he had said, you know, if you don't go, then he said, I think you're going to regret it. So I decided that I should probably go and help with family. And right when I left, my ex-husband took child support out on me. And so I wasn't able to go to court because I never got the letter. So I ended up, like, going to court. And then I didn't go to court, but they ended up deciding that I had to pay $800 a month. So my kids were almost 17 and 18 at that point, even though I'd always had split custody with my ex before that. And then because my eldest son got a scholarship to go to college, I had to pay until he turned 21. So, you know, being in a place where there's not really as many places to work, I ended up getting way behind on the child support, and basically it like put me in a position where I couldn't live in a home anymore. Well, so when I left, they were around 16, 17. So it was only like 2 years if he hadn't got the scholarship. If he hadn't got that scholarship, then it would have been easy. It would have been over in like 2 years. But because he got the scholarship, it kept going and going and going. So I was like supposed to pay $800 for, what was it, like 6 or 7 years out of my paycheck. And when you're basically making minimum wage, there's no way, you know? Like I went from being like a high-end bartender in Portland where there's people and actually making decent money to like working with adults and children with disabilities, making $15 an hour, you know, in a small town. So there was no way for me to catch up. I just could never catch up to it. And I also felt like this kind of like feeling like I needed to do it anyway because they're my kids, you know, so I didn't want to disappoint them, but it really ruined my entire life. My kids still have like issues like talking to me because they're mad at me too, but they didn't live with me for like almost 5 years, you know, so it's a lot easier for their dad to have a little bit more of a push on, oh well, your mom left you, you know, a thing. So I mean, I get how it feels for men who have to pay child support at this point. Like I feel really bad for them. So
yeah,
but yeah, it goes both ways, especially for women, because women technically we do get paid less, you know, and there are harder jobs for us to find that pay the amount that they could pay a man for a physical labor job. And I wasn't able to find anything that I could qualify for that. I'm a, like, 5'4", tall, you know, woman. I don't have the strength to do what most of those guys could do. I had been married for, like, almost 10 years before that in a regular, pretty much, like, I would say regular relationship, but, like, not a domestic violent relationship. So then when I moved to the coast and then got into this domestic violence relationship, that, like, really took a toll on me, too. And, you know, I ended up having to go to a lot of counseling and psychology and thought I was crazy for a while. And, you know, finally I got, like, back into a better headspace to where I could, like, deal with things again. And I decided, well, I want to come back up to Portland where my kids are. So that's where how I ended up back here. But I'm still struggling. I'm still trying to get back on my feet. It's not been easy.
And how long have you been here at Kenton Women's Village?
About a year. So.
What kind of like support do they offer?
You basically like have different people that can like help you with like doctor appointments or, you know, looking into housing or just basic anything really, like if you need some shoes, if you need clothes for a job interview, you know, things, they will find a way to figure out how to help you with anything. So like even for me, like trying to pay off the child support, one of the people that came in to help, he was able to get like certain types of financial things taken care of for me so that I could get the child support paid off, you know, a little bit faster. At the Catholic Charities specifically, like, they have women that come from the church that will come in and, like, have little dinners or whatnot with us and just kind of try to brighten our day sometimes. Sometimes it can be fun, sometimes it can be annoying when you've been working and you're tired and you're like, oh, I have to go in here and have a social gathering. But sometimes it's good, too, to keep us, like, you know, just basically in the environment, because it can get kind of depressing and sad being here. When I first went through the domestic violence stuff, I was on the coast, and so I did end up going to a domestic violence women's place. And it was different in the way that, like, it was a little bit more personal, I guess. Like, you still were in a house with a room, and some people had rooms that they had to share, but for the most part, like, you didn't have somebody, like, constantly, like, every day having something to do. Like, I feel like here, that you do have to, like, stay on track. And if you don't, then you have to leave. My goal is to eventually get into a place to live, like, which I'm getting very close to. I actually am trying to get into a different type of work. I was a bartender here for a really long time. And as much as I like it, I don't know how I'm going to retire doing it. So I have an idea of getting a job with a federal job that actually has retirement. Hopefully. So I have a job interview on March 13th. Yeah, there's definitely, like, some things about bartending I think that, like, Portland should think about. In fact, one woman was talking about how the bars always give a certain amount of money for the lottery to the bar owner. But technically, the bartenders are the ones that are doing the work for the money. She's like, maybe we should, like, try to, like, start something to make it so that the bars have to give a certain percentage of that money to the bartender who's actually doing the work. Bartenders should have insurance. It's a lot more dangerous to bartend than it is to be a barista.
So here at Kenton Women's Village, like, you have your own pod, and what's that like? Does it feel like a little home?
It feels like you're camping, kind of, you know? I mean, it's warmer than camping, and you have, like, a certain amount of space that it's easier to keep your things. I guess it's more like living out of a van or a mini trailer, you know, it's that, like, that size. But then the bathroom and the refrigerator is all in, like, the main center, so you kind of do end up having to, like, run into people constantly. So, like, they're trying to help people rehabilitate themselves in all sorts of ways, but, you know, it's difficult for people who've been through a lot of trauma, and if you don't want to go get help, then, you know, it's, they give you the opportunity, and if you don't want it, then you don't get it. So a lot of times they will take women who have more, like, mental issues or who don't want to follow the program, and they'll put them in a different place, you know, somewhere else that's more working on mental health issues, you know. So, but for the most part here, like, if you have your issues, your mental issues or whatnot, and you're taking care of that, and you're also working and you're saving, that, you know, all of these things, then they're right behind you all the way, and you're not going to have to worry about getting kicked out at all. The snowstorm was a little bit hard for some, because there's mostly older women here, I feel like, and when it iced over, all these women were, like, stuck in their little things, and then the people who work here aren't able to come down here every day, so we have to take care of each other when things like that happen. So you'll find yourself out there, you know, just, it was my job who I had to make the little pathways to everybody's little pod so they could get to the bathroom, you know, things like that. So, yeah, it can be a little bit difficult at times, but other times it's not a big deal. it's easy to have an opinion about something if you know nothing about it. They can talk all they want about it, but they have no idea what these people have been through. Some people do. I'm sure some people have been homeless or some people have been put to a place like that, but a lot of people might have like more family members that are helping in that spot. So there are certain people I do think probably understand it a little bit more than others, but for the most part, if you have not been here, then you have no idea what it's like.
Yeah.
But also, people who have drug problems or people who have mental issues, like, there is a reason why, unfortunately, that happened to them. And people are so horrible and so mean to people who've already been put into a place where they had to deal with this, you know? Like, there's no empathy for these people. In fact, people make fun of them or go out and record them or, you know, just make it into, like, something that it completely isn't and not adding any help to the problem, you know? I feel like I'm not really sure where all the extra drug issues come from. It would be nice if Portland had a little bit better way of helping these people instead of just like throwing them out on the street. But I mean, we have all these shelters now and all these different places that are supposed to be helping these people, but we don't have a lot of like mental health issue, you know, or mental health help. Where do they bring people who are having the mental issues? They just bring them to the hospital. You know, like, I don't really know if that's helping, because like, I've seen several of the women here get taken to the hospital, be gone for a week, and then come back, and they're okay for a while, and then they end up going back, you know, to the hospital again. And so I'm not really sure, you know, it would be helpful if they maybe had more places for mental help, you know, mental health issues. For me, like, when I went to my psychologist, because I thought that I was losing my mind, which at that point I probably kind of was. Finally being told, like, no, you're not crazy, you're actually in a domestic violence situation and you need to get out of it. And they did want to prescribe me different types of pills. And I tried at first and I just felt like it made me worse. And so I finally went back and said, you know, I want to talk to someone. I want to be able to, like, work through my trauma. I don't want to be able to keep on covering it up. It's not helping me. And so at that point was where I felt like I kind of got to get heard a little bit more. Finally started going to like a decent counselor who actually like did give me like homework to do to, you know, kind of process through a lot of the things that I'd been through to make it so that I could go back out and be around people again. Mm-hmm. So medicine is not gonna necessarily, sometimes it'll probably help you. I do have like one pill that I still sometimes take for anxiety and it's as needed. But otherwise, like, I don't want to have to take medicine to cover up the things that happen. I just wanted to, you know, get worked through and be able to go on with my day without having to be scared all the time. I mean, just even being there or being here for the other women and being able to tell the other women, you know, your own experience sometimes can put them into going somewhere else to getting help. Because I know one of the other women here, after I told her about my trauma counseling, that she got into the trauma counseling. So I think that's a really, really good idea, too. Mm-hmm. If you can call and get food stamps, you can call and you can get health care. And then you can go to any place around here in Portland. There's so many clinics, and you can get yourself a counselor. And once you get into the counselor, you can go to see the psychologist. It's just as easy as getting free food. And it's probably just as important. OHP, they'll get you a dentist. You know, they'll get all the other things that, you know, you need for your physical health care as well. But definitely, like, if you've been through any domestic violence or any, like, drug addiction, counseling is really, really important. At least it was for me. I don't see how you can't have that hand in hand.
That was a program participant at the Kenton Women's Village. Up next, we'll hear from Valerie Yvette Peterson, a staff member at the Village.
My name is Valerie Yvette Peterson. I'm case manager here with Portland Kenton Women's Village. This is an organization that seeks to provide housing to women that are not actively parenting, to help them in transition for full-time permanent housing. And the program is set up to be supportive in virtually every way possible, whether it is providing or outsourcing services for mental health treatment, whether a lady has a need for some type of social service, whether it's health care, medical, dental. We're there to support in those ways, although we don't directly provide those services here. We do connect with community to make sure that a lady that is going to reside here, that she's well-rounded and prepared for that venture when she's ready to have permanent housing. So when a lady comes here, the first chain of events is really to meet with our manager, Victoria Waldrop, to determine eligibility, and that really is based on medical assessment, mental health assessment, financial assessment, and to see if they're a good fit, and for them to also see if Kenton Women's Village is going to be a good fit for them, because we all know all villages or all shelters are not the same. And so what we provide here, if a lady is approved to be in our program, some basic requirements are to attend a class here, or a what we call a GA, which is a General Assembly. And it's really just 1 hour a week where we all get together, we have lunch here at the village, and we discuss resources. It's really an opportunity to come together and discuss things that are upcoming for a lady where they may be having a need of transition. Another requirement or part of their responsibility in being here is to meet once a week or a couple times a week, depending on what the schedule is, with a case manager here. And at that point, it's pretty much just like a caseworker in a social service agency. They sit down with each lady here to discuss goals, to discuss short-term and long-term goals. In addition to that, because this is an independent living shelter, it is not 24-hour staffed. We do not have medical staff on site. We don't provide those services. So because of that, this, in essence, is their home. So just like any other home, there's tidying up to do. There's cleaning to do. So those are parameters by which someone that is coming in, they're agreeing to participate in. And it's things such as cleaning up the community space, cleaning up the kitchen, cleaning up the bathrooms. One of the benefits in staying at the village, maybe versus some other shelters, or each lady has their own individual tiny home. We call them pods here. You're not having to bunk with someone else. So you have your own personal space. You have your own door. You have your own code to get into your door. So it's really just getting ladies mentally prepared. It is a sort of a cognitive approach to self-sufficiency when they are on their own. The hope is that someone will come in with income, and the reason that's a benefit in our program is if you have income already, we can help support that, and it makes the process and the transition a lot smoother to work with one of our case managers and one of our in the housing portion of our program, because in that sense you have income, we can really wrap around you a lot easier and more smoothly, so when you do get housing, you can cover your housing costs. We do have ladies here that come without income. We don't turn them away, although the process may be a little more difficult because you would not be eligible to immediately work with one of our housing caseworkers if you don't have income. We do try our best to help outsource so that you can get a job. We don't provide direct job service, but we do help you in every possible way to steer you in the right direction for resources. Yes, ladies do come with Social Security benefits, so those are also ways that we can provide those supportive services. It's really a program where we are helping in the moment. We're helping a need that a lady may have now, but it's also supportive services to prepare you for when you do leave here, you will be ready, or at least you're in the right path to be able to access resources so that you can get yourself prepared on your own. As I say, we're not 24-hour staffed, so the reality is sometimes we may see someone that does have a substance abuse issue, whether it's just through observation, whether it's through behavior. And we do address those accordingly, and it could vary based on the individual. because we have to take care in how those things are approached using trauma-informed language in communication. But if we do get to a point where we see there is a need for that, we have agencies that we do reach out to, and we contact them. We may have to have someone come here and do an immediate assessment. We may need to have someone come here and do a wellness check, which happens here, and we can have them transported to a facility, and that is something that we do, and they receive the help. They're housing here is not so much in jeopardy at risk because it's not a punishment. It's really to do whatever we can do, what we can offer here to get you help so that you can come back to the village and be productive. You could come back to the village and have continue a sense of pride in being able to do whatever it is you need to do to continue on the path to self-sufficiency on the road of whether it's recovery, whether it's some type of a transitional process you're in. We still want you to be able to come back after you've gotten that help so that we can continue to help you. Our wait list is currently closed. We will be opening our wait list in the coming months. If we do have a wait list, someone will put their name on the wait list, they'll call our hotline number, and when the wait list opens up, we just go through the list. And then based on the number of pods or openings we have, we just call directly from the list in order, have them come in, they complete an application, there's a sort of just a general brief intake that we have with them. And if they are interested, they would complete the paperwork. When a lady is here, what we try to make sure of is we have security. We're working now on revamping, like for instance, on the fences here so that you can't even see into the village. We do have a very strict security system here. And that's one of the other things that's sort of, I guess you could say, on an honor system because we're not 24-hour staffed. But each lady that comes here has her own gate code, and then each lady has their own pod code to their own individual home. So that way we also know if something were to happen, which it never has happened, we know what code was used to get in. That type of thing. And we ask each lady, they sign a document making sure on an honor system that they never give their code out. We have to just trust and ensure that that's not going to happen. And I've never experienced anything like that where anyone's given their code. So it's just one of those circumstances where you have to just continue to remind ladies the importance of that. And one thing I have found is once someone comes here, they see how tight-knit we become, the ladies become living here. It's a family. And after they've come here and they see that and they feel that, I don't think, these are my thoughts, I don't think they even want to do anything that's going to create an unsafe environment for anyone because that would impact them as well. So I believe that's usually the case and why ladies are so close-knit. There have been times, and just a caveat to that, men are not allowed here in the village. And the only time we do have males come in the village, they're usually a worker or they're here with someone or we're here with them. They're doing work. So, I think for the most part, women do feel safe and secure here. Just by their behavior, their actions, and the words that they say. They tell me that all the time, that they would not want to be anywhere else. Some ladies say they've been in other circumstances, in other villages, and other shelters. There's none like Kenton Women's Village, and they would not want to be anywhere. You know, we hear that, even though we're not 24-hour staff. So, that's a huge compliment. Because, yes, this is a voluntary program. No one is mandated to be here. There is no court written document that says, you have to do X number of months. This is a voluntary program. So for a lady to come here making an intentional decision to be here and follow the rules, it says a lot about the program. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The more ladies that are here, yes, in the bigger picture of things, you're able to help more people, but then it also ups the morale, here in the village of the ladies that are still here. You know, there's a few here, but and they're doing great. But sometimes when you have a lot, you have your good and your bad. Yeah, you can also have the downside, well, there's too many ladies here, you know, but it's, it, from what I've seen, it's wonderful. It's a bigger family, and you have more, the classes are full, you know, you, we have a lot of volunteer agencies that come here to provide services. So when they come to bring blankets, to do Christmas ornaments, there's going to be a substantial number of ladies in the workshop for them as well. So all of that would be a win-win situation when we get more ladies in here.
That was Valerie Yvette Peterson, a staff member at the Kenton Women's Village. More information about the Kenton Women's Village can be found on their website, located at CatholicCharitiesOregon.org. And a full list of shelters funded by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, including congregate, motel, and alternative village-style shelters, can be found at johs.us/shelter. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland. This podcast is produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the city of Portland, metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching for Out of the Streets of Portland. And you can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, at our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during our special programming.